Sorry, just for the listeners, we lost the first few minutes of the recording. So I just wanted to go over. This is a caller who called in a couple of weeks ago, and he wants to know how to more productively deal with his avoidance of anger and his general suppression of emotions as a whole. So I was just talking about how there's a difference between repression and suppression. Suppression is when you say, I'm not going to feel this right now. Maybe you're in a business meeting and you feel sad about something. You kind of swallow it down. But then later you experience the emotion. That's suppression. Repression is when you say, or you make it as a constant habit, I'm not going to feel things at all. So sorry to just take us in a sprint through the first few minutes of the conversation, but the recorder just failed and we lost it. So we're going to talk again about how to more productively deal with anger or other emotions. Have I caught us up? Did I miss anything huge? Oh, and your parents separated when you were 8, and they did say to you, yeah. "Oh, you can talk about it with us if you want." And I was sort of rolling my eyes at the idea that an 8-year-old kid can lead a discussion on the emotional effects of a collapsing marriage and a divorce, which an 8-year-old kid can in no way, shape, or form do. So it's like an 8-year-old kid saying to his father, oh yeah, no, I can come and help you move all of the heavy machinery. It's like, no, you can't. You can't really do that at all. So did I give us a accurate, sorry for the massive sprint through the recap, but it was something like that, right?
That's a good summary, I think. I couldn't really lead that discussion, and I don't think I would be able to necessarily explain it at the time, but I think I kind of knew intuitively that it was bullshit. And I think they might have asked here or there things, do you want to talk about it or something, but they really needed to just be more proactive with that. And we did talk a little bit last time, not about that specifically, but about in terms of dating advice with my dad not giving me any, and then I asked him about it, and he sort of said that's sort of similar thing, like, oh well, you know, I've always been, you know, here and available to talk about anything, but I don't think it's my role to, you know, I don't know how you'd put it, but I don't think it's sort of my role to proactively give advice. I mean, he wouldn't have put it like that, but it's not my role to impose or, I guess he probably thought it would be kind of pushy if he would have given advice on that dating stuff. I don't know. He'd probably have phrased it in a way that was sounded slightly better.
Okay, sorry, tough time communicating about this stuff, right? It's a little hard to follow the thoughts.
Yeah.
And you repeat a lot. Sorry. No, it's fine. It's fine. I just sort of wanted to point it out. That's has to do with dissociation, where you're just kind of picking words like a large language model, just sort of picking out words that come next, rather than really focusing on communicating, which is fine. So if your parents, when they got divorced, so your parents get divorced and they're going through their own anger, sorrows, and all that kind of stuff. Now, if you were to sit down with either of your parents or both of them and, you know, wail and cry and express your absolute shock, sadness, misery, and so on, how would that have gone?
Well, I mean, I know when my parents told me, I remember when they told me that they were getting divorced, and I did cry at the time. And I guess it didn't really, I don't know what, if there was a much better way to explain it, but they didn't explain, well, my dad was the one who wanted the divorce, and, certainly wasn't completely honest about why it happened. He said something like, I don't love your mom anymore, which is really obviously not the full story.
Okay, yeah, how do you feel, my God, this is brutal conversation. How do you feel that when we're talking about this stuff, because this way of talking is really hard to follow. Like, so how are you feeling when we're talking about this stuff?
Feeling quite anxious. Sadness is coming through as well.
And do you remember what my question was that you were trying to answer?
What would it be like for, if I was to go to my parents, crying?
Yeah, every time you were sad, every time you were sad about the divorce, to sit down and talk for an hour or two with your parents and express all the range of your emotions, how would that have gone?
How would that have gone? I don't think I would have got much out of it. Like, I think they would have sort of talked to me about it, and I don't think I would come away with, extra information or anything that.
Okay, how do you think they would have reacted emotionally to your tears and upset and your anger and disappointment and all of that? Like the full raw force of your feelings.
Hey, I guess that, I don't know really how they would react. Like, I'm not sure what they would do.
What's your guess?
I think they wouldn't. Yeah, if I was crying to them, they would be maybe, I don't know if this is the right word, but take pity on me or something like that, and maybe, I don't think there would be. They might, I guess, if I was sort of asking too many probing questions, I think they could get a bit avoidant, and so maybe there could be some. But I don't know what the emotion would be, but I certainly know there are times when they don't want to talk about something, and I usually would just not pursue that. But I don't know. Strong emotions of how they'd react. I'm struggling with this one.
So how do you know when they don't want to talk about something?
I think the sort of answers that I'd give, maybe they'd be a bit terse. I could probably see them. Maybe their anxiety would rise a little bit, and I could kind of see that they're not comfortable, and they kind of just want to give some sort of answer to the question and then move on. I think that would be it. I think that's how they'd try and deal with it, sort of short, sharp answers. If that makes sense.
And sorry, remind me, I know your father said he fell out of love with your mom, which doesn't really mean anything. So do you know the immediate cause for the divorce? Sorry if you mentioned it or if you mentioned it the last time we talked, but I just want to have it fresh in my mind.
I think we kind of talked about it last time, but as far as I know, there was no immediate cause of the divorce. When I talked to my dad about this years later, as an adult, he said I think he hadn't been feeling, who'd been having these feelings for years, and didn't think that he was really compatible with my mom.
Okay, you're not giving me any answers. Just tell me you don't know if you don't know. Not really compatible is just another way of saying I fell out of love. There was no divorce, there was no violence, no drug use, no immediate financial catastrophes. Like, you don't know the proximate cause, is that right?
I don't know the proximate cause.
Okay, so they never really told you why they got divorced. But you know, or at least you believe that it wasn't anything that was a dire emergency, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So, in the absence of some massive dire emergency, the only reason that people get divorced is because they're selfish.
Yeah.
Because if you can be together for long enough to have an 8-year-old kid, which means you've been together probably 10, 12 or more years, then you're compatible enough to see it through. Now, the only way that people and this is a generality, we can always think of exceptions, but this is a generality. So the only way that people can get divorced is if they ignore the catastrophic effects on their children. It's the only way it can be done. I mean, it's sort of like the only way you can use some horrible explosive device to detonate in a building is if you ignore the people living in it, right? Or you view them as an enemy or something like that, right? So the only way that you can get a divorce and go through with it, if you have kids, is if you ignore how much it makes the kids suffer. Because if you focus on how much it makes the kids suffer, well, you can't really get a divorce because it's causing too much suffering. So if you say, well, I'm going to be plus five happier. And sorry, how many kids were there?
Three.
So if you say, I'm going to be plus five happier or even plus 10 happier if I get a divorce. I'm minus five if I get a divorce. I'm going to go to plus five happiness. Okay, it's 10 spread points, right? However, my kids are going to go from plus five happiness to minus five happiness. So I get plus 10, but my kids are minus 30. The family as a whole is minus 20, and that's not even counting my wife, right? Let's say she's completely neutral. Let's just imagine that. So the only way you can focus on your plus 10 happiness going from a minus 5 to a plus 5 is if you forget about your kids going from a plus 5 to a minus 5. It's if you ignore that, because otherwise you have to take that into account that you can't really get divorced. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the only way that you can get divorced is if you ignore, to a large degree, the unhappiness your divorce produces in your children, right? We agree on that in as a whole, right?
Yeah.
Right. So you get divorced, and then your children are not allowed to communicate in any significant or long-lasting way their unhappiness, because then it makes you feel like a selfish asshole.
Ugh.
You know, like if you're a drunk and you break open your kid's piggy bank and you steal their money to go and buy some beer, and then you come home and your kid is like weeping and wailing, like, somebody stole my money. Where's my money? I saved this money for 2 years and I was going to buy it, right? I mean, you feel like an asshole, right?
Yeah.
So you couldn't feel unhappy, because if you felt unhappy, your parents would experience massive regret. And they would question whether divorce was a good idea. And if it's any consolation, this is true of all the children of divorce. All the children, and I'm not, again, we can think of exceptions. This is like 90, 95% of divorces. The children are not allowed to feel unhappy, because then that would change the calculation of the parents. The parents want to get a divorce, so they just say, well, I want to move from minus five to plus five. The fact that my kids move from plus five or plus 10 to minus five or minus 10 cannot be part of my equation. Because if it is part of my equation, in other words, if I'm a good parent, I'm not going to get divorced. So you can't feel that.
Yes.
The only way this ship sails is if all of the emotions are thrown overboard. Sorry, at least all of your emotions and your siblings too. Sorry, you were going to say?
Yeah, didn't want to interrupt. But there would be for talking to my dad about it, but talking to my mum, as far as I know, she did not want the divorce to happen. So why could I not talk to her about it and express the unhappiness to her?
Well, because she is still causal in the divorce. So either your father wanted something in your mother to change that she could change but chose not to. Like, maybe he says, you know, all we do is we come home and we watch TV all night. I'm wasting my life. Let's go do some stuff. And she's like, no, I've got my shows, you know, whatever it is, right? I want to stay home. And this goes on for a long time. And he's just like, I cannot spend the rest of my life sitting on a couch watching shows. Like, I feel like I'm dying or suffocating. And again, I'm just making up some scenario here, right? And then he eventually divorces her. And then she says, well, I didn't want the divorce. And it's like, yeah, but you weren't listening to your husband and what he wanted. And what we want changes over the course of our life. When I was younger, I wanted to go out more. Now I'm a little bit more happy to stay home. Good conversation, game of cards. You know, I'm obviously pushing 60, so I'm not out there busting moves on the dance floor. I mean, occasionally, but not too often. So things change over the course of your life. And so if your father wanted stuff from your mother or wanted some change in the relationship and she wasn't willing to provide it, then he's going to be tempted to divorce her. So she could say, well, I didn't want the divorce, but did she act in a way that made divorce more likely? Like a man could say, I don't want a divorce. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm still going to be sleeping with everything that has a pulse and at least one leg, but I don't want a divorce. Like, but he's going to get divorced probably because his wife is going to kick his ass out, if that makes sense.
And yeah, okay.
And the
yeah.
other possibility, which I can keep more brief, the other possibility, of course, is that she married a guy who's restless and bored with marriage and doesn't want to stay married, in which case she chose the wrong guy to be the father of her children. In which case she can say, well, let's say that she married a guy who, you know, is dying to become a merchant sailor or, you know, something where he's gone all the time and so on, right? And she says, well, I didn't want a divorce. It's like, yeah, but you married a guy who was going to be gone all the time. And so if you marry a guy who doesn't want to stay married to you, either that's because he did want to stay married to you, but something changed, now he doesn't, in which case you should have tried to adapt to that thing, or you married a guy who never liked you in particular, in which case you made a mistake as far as that goes. And so your mom can't really say I'm blameless or innocent in a divorce, if that makes sense. She either didn't adapt in the way she should have to something he wanted, or she chose the wrong guy.
Right. Okay. So I wouldn't get much out of talking to her at all because she wouldn't have been able to be fully honest about it. And what I really needed is honesty of what actually happened. Like, that would be the ideal thing, right?
And you still don't know what happened, right?
Yeah. Not 100%, but I think it was, well, from my dad's view, I think my mom was his first relationship, and he said he felt kind of quite insecure in his 20s, and I think, and he said around about 30 or so, he's, you know, this is about the right age to get married, and I think he thought more or less this is the best that I can do, even though they're probably not that compatible, really.
I don't know what you mean by this compatibility. Sorry, I don't know what you mean by this compatibility thing.
Right.
I mean, we love virtue. If two people are virtuous, they're going to have respect and admiration for each other. I'm not sure if there's a magic key called compatibility that opens the locks of people's hearts, if that makes sense.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's not super clear. Well, I think my dad's more educated and intelligent than my mom, and he also is religious, and my mom wasn't. Yeah, I think probably those two things, where they differ.
Okay, but they were together long enough to have three kids, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's clearly not that bad, right?
I mean, I'm not saying like, oh, that justifies it or anything, but I'm just saying what he told me. And
no, but he knew that she was not religious when he married her, right?
Yeah.
So you don't get to change that later. I don't get to wake up one morning and say to my wife, hey, you're kind of short. It's over, right? I knew she was short when I married her.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a good reason or anything. Like, I'm not under any illusions about that.
Okay, so it's a bad reason. So did he just, because another thing that can happen is a man starts to make some money and then looks at his wife and he says, you know, I'm wealthier now. I could get a more attractive female.
I think that probably did happen. I think that's probably part of it.
A woman's sexual market value as a whole goes down over her 20s and 30s, but a man's goes up because he's, you know, usually making some money, got some savings, got some income and some professional success. And so, but I mean, that's the deal you make, right? The woman trades in her high sexual market value, the man's goes up later, but there's supposed to be, you know, loyalty. I mean, your father can't have been that religious if he broke his marriage vows, because those are solemn vows sworn before Almighty God.
I mean, I don't think he was super religious. That's quite
I mean, the more he dials up religion to excuse getting a divorce, the more he should stay married.
Yeah, like, I mean, yeah, it's not because he's Catholic, and you know, obviously that's not something you can do in Catholicism, is get divorced.
Oh yeah.
And he told me that he went to the priest to ask if he could get the marriage annulled, and they
not
said
with
no.
Three kids, you can't.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, if you're married under false pretenses within a week, you can probably get annulled, but it's pretty tough later.
Yeah, I mean, I think he was looking for a guilt-free way to get out of it, I think.
Right. Right. Okay, so you and your siblings cannot express the misery of your parents' divorce because that will make them feel bad. And therefore, because of their hedonism, and they get divorced on the grounds that the kids will be fine. Kids are resilient. The kids will be fine. They'll struggle through. They'll, you know, it's better for them if we're happy. It's better for them if, you know, they're not in a household with people who aren't super passionate for each other and so on. So they talk themselves into changing the calculations. So I'll go from -5 to +5. The kids will go, you know, from 5 to 2 for a little while. Then they'll go back up to 7. Because they won't be in this oppressive marriage where people don't, are not passionate about each other. So people do this equation. And I know this sounds like kind of silly with regards to the math, but it is actually how people do stuff, like unconsciously. We are very sort of math-based creatures. So the parents say, there'll be a dip, but the kids will end up, they'll be happier in the long run. And so they can then view the family as being up in happiness points over time. Like in the same way you go to the dentist, you're not happy being at the dentist, but you're happier later because you don't have sore teeth or whatever it is, receding gums. So that's how they do it. That's how they do the calculation in their unconscious. And if you go from +5 to -5 and stay there, they're like, oh shit, did I lie to myself about the calculation? Am I wrong about this? Have I just made my children miserable? Because I thought they were just going to be unhappy for a little while and then be happier. And if you keep going and being unhappier, then it screws up the whole equation. It's like some guy, you know, puts 500 gallons of fuel into his plane, and then he's up at 30,000 feet and he's letting it run out of fuel. He's like, oh shit, did I slip a digit? Did I fat finger something? Because we're in trouble now, right? Because I miscalculated. And so your happiness has to be denied for the equation to work. You cannot show unhappiness, at least not for long. You're allowed a little bit. Yeah, you know, okay, yeah, going to go, you know, we'll even allow you to go into the negatives for a little bit. But you better ship up and you better shape up, because the whole calculation rests on you guys ending up at a 7 relatively quickly, so you can't show your unhappiness. Does that make sense?
Yeah, in an abstract way, but what would actually happen? So if I was to show my unhappiness and then they realize, oh shit, the calculations are wrong, like what, why couldn't I do that? What would happen?
Well, anger.
Well, they'll just be angry at their own kids for...
Oh, you're being self-indulgent, snap out of it. It's not that bad. Stop feeling so sorry for yourself. I'm hurting too. You know, the standard stuff that comes out of selfish people when other people's feelings inconvenience them.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. That's enough. That's enough. Dry your eyes. We got to move on with life. We can't just wallow in the past. We can't just sit in our own misery. We got to move on. We got to march on. I mean, I heard all this shit when I was in England growing up. Right? You're going to drown in this quicksand of your own self-pity. You know, I'm moving on. Your brothers are moving on. You got to move on. Like, you can't just wallow in this. It's done. It's done. We got to move on. We got to find a better thing in life. And if you come back and you're unhappy again, what happens? They get even more annoyed. You can't slip into the negatives and stay there, because then the equation doesn't work and they feel terrible.
Yeah, I think that definitely would happen if I had done that. But why? Because there's other, you know, family members around, like grandparents, and they didn't talk to me about it. Like, is it just wanting to avoid a difficult conversation, or like, why? Yeah, why? What's their incentive to not?
Okay, let's talk about the grandparents on your father's side. Well, they raised a selfish guy. So how are they going to deal with your unhappiness? They're going to then feel guilty about the amount of sorrow that their son is causing their grandchildren. And maybe they gave him advice like, you know what, if you're that miserable, the kids will be better off. If anyone even thinks about the kids in divorce, which sometimes they don't really. But yeah, they could have given bad advice to your father, in which case they don't want to hear about your unhappiness. 500 gallons ought to be totally enough to get you to Newfoundland. You know, I'm at 500 feet running out of fuel. Oh, shit. If you give people bad advice, you don't want to see the sorrow.
There probably is something in that because, well, 3 out of their 5 kids got divorced.
Yeah. I mean, we make good decisions. I mean, there's moral reasons to make decisions, but we make good decisions when we get the math right as well. Our business succeeds if we get a certain amount of income compared to our expenses, right? So if we get the math right, then things are better. If we get the math wrong, we can bully people, especially children. We can bully children into conforming with the math we want. You cannot be unhappy because I banked my entire selfish decision on it being better for you. You're not allowed to be unhappy because that screws up the whole equation and then I feel terrible. And because I'm a selfish person, I don't want to feel terrible.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. And then I guess on my mom's side, it's that I don't know how much my mom contributed to the divorce, directly or indirectly, but I guess she made a bad decision, maybe with the marriage or what she did in the marriage, and then my grandparents probably weren't giving her great guidance there. So that there would be blowback for them because of that.
Well, okay, so let's say that your father was missing more stimulating conversation. Maybe. You said it's a compatibility issue, right?
I think it was the opposite.
Your mother was missing? I thought you said your father was smarter than your mother.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
Sorry,
that
what?
Makes sense, yeah. I thought you were saying the opposite. So yeah, my mom wasn't really providing.
Okay, we'll let that Freudian slip go by for the moment. So let's say that your father was really into World War II history, loved talking about World War II history. And let's say that World War II history was not particularly interesting to your mother. What should she do?
Well, I think she should make an effort to try and learn a bit about it and engage, but you know, I guess with hobbies, you don't have to share all the same hobbies. So, I guess if she would give him time to go and pursue
I can't do that. I didn't say you have to share all the same hobbies. So let's not go down this route of heaviness, right? So if your father really loves talking about World War II history, then your mother should learn about World War II history. That's just being married. My wife will ask me what color we should paint something. Do I care? I really don't. But I care that she cares, so I'll go and talk about it.
Okay. So you've got to accommodate to some extent.
Well, yeah, if your partner's into something, you know, I mean, you have this as a parent, which is if your kid is into something, you learn about that thing. You know, my daughter was very interested in a video game called Little Nightmares. I can't tell you how much I've learned about the video game Little Nightmares and played it because that's what she's into. Good. I mean, you get into what people are into. My wife, like a lot of wives, likes going to farmers markets. Do I, as a straight man, enjoy going to farmers markets?
Probably not.
I do not. Do I happily go to farmers markets? I do, because it makes my wife happy. So I'll go and I'll poke around and we'll maybe buy a little tart or something like that. And I'll make a joke about this being my second little tart of the day or something like that. So I go to, you know, my daughter likes Renaissance fairs. So we go to Renaissance fairs. I mean, I don't mind them actually, but I wouldn't go on my own, right? You know, when my daughter was younger, she liked going to playgrounds. Do I go to playgrounds? I do not. Even if there's nobody there and it's not weird, I don't go to playgrounds because I'm 59. But my daughter likes going to play. In fact, we were just up at a place with a big giant playground, and a friend of my daughter's was there. And we, you know, for old time's sake, we jumped on all of the old stuff, right? We climbed the spider webs. We did the zip lines. We did the roundabout. It was fun. Would I do that? No. But my daughter wanted to do it. I did it from old time's sake. Probably the last time we'll ever do it. And so you get into what the people you love are into. There's not a coincidence of wants.
Yeah.
And my wife does the same thing. I quite like true crime drama sometimes, because I love studying the nature of evil. It's kind of the job. And I don't necessarily saying that my wife is like super keen on true crime dramas, but she'll watch it and we'll talk about it. And then there's stuff that she likes to watch from time to time, which I'm happy to dip in and so on. And if she says, oh, this is a good show, and I'm like, I don't know. She's like, oh, it gets better. I'll trust her. I'll keep watching it, right? So you just, you overlap. I mean, she's not into everything I'm into. I'm not into everything she's into. But, you know, if she's really into something, I'll find a way to make it. And even if it's not fun for me, it's fun for me that it's fun for her, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you don't have to completely, you know, adopt their hobby, but you've got to, you know, engage with it somewhat, and because of them.
Well, otherwise, what's going to happen? Let's say my wife wants to go to the farmer's market. What am I? I'm just going to sit home? I'd rather go with her. She's great fun to go places with. We have a blast. Doesn't hugely matter where we go.
Yeah.
Okay. We just go together, right? So if your father wants to go to the World War II Museum, then your mother should go and ask a bunch of questions and read up ahead of time. And, oh, is this a Spitfire? Oh, is that a Messerschmitt? Is that a Hawker Hurricane? You know, is that a B-52? And just, wow, that's cool. Imagine the bombs and, you know, like, wow, this is where the little guy used to shoot from under the underside of the airplane. Like, that's crazy. You know, just get into it. Why not?
Yeah.
Because otherwise, okay, what happens is you end up doing fewer and fewer things together, and then you just wake up, look across, and see a stranger.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's, again, it's selfish to say, well, I'm just not into that. So I'm just not going to look into it. I'm not going to do anything about it. It's not, I don't care. Like, that's selfish. When you get married, you say, I love you, and therefore I'm going to put every kind of effort in to figure out what you like and how I can overlap with that. I mean, you know, there's this memory game called, I think it's called Anomia, and I'm not particularly good at it, but my daughter is fantastic at it, so she loves to play it. I feel like a complete mouth breather idiot playing this game, but she enjoys it, so I'll just do it. I mean, it's fine. You know, we laugh, we have fun, blah, blah, blah. I mean, what am I going to do? No. No, I'm not playing that game. I'm not good at it, and I don't enjoy it. It's like, come on. I mean, you know, she wants to play it. Let's play it. Am I going to really, at the end of my life, on my deathbed, say, gee, I wish I'd played fewer fun games with my daughter, man. That would have been great.
Yeah.
Right. And the reason I'm saying all of this is that I assume that your parents, being what it seems like, pretty selfish people, your parents did not put aside their preferences to pursue yours, like what you were interested, what you were into.
Yeah, a little bit, but not that much.
Yeah, not much, right? Not much. I was talking to a guy not too long ago. He was working 3 years on a car in the basement, like I think it was a life-size car or something. And 3 years, they never came down, never, not once. I mean, so you really do have to, you know, throw yourself into what your kids are into. That's how you show you care about them. You care about the person, yeah, not the thing itself. I don't care about farmers markets. I love my wife. And she loves me, so she's not going to drag me to 5 farmers markets a week, not that she'd go or whatever, right? But I care about the person. Otherwise, it's just a coincidence of once. You know, we both happen to be walking in the same direction for a while until we're not, right? Then it's just a coincidence of once. But yeah, of course you put your immediate preferences aside to make the other person happy, sure, because their happiness is your preference. My fundamental preference is that my wife has a great Saturday, and if she wants to go to the farmer's market, I'll go to the farmer's market. And I won't go like scuffing my feet and scowling or oh, I wish I was somewhere else. Yeah, I mean, I'll go and we'll talk about stuff. And, oh, I haven't seen this vendor here before. And do you think that is a good butter tart? And my daughter and I will roam around looking for samples. Like, it's this primitive hunter-gatherer gene that we both have. We must get samples. And so, yeah, we'll go do it. And it'll be fun. And it doesn't sound like your parents tried to get into what you were into with great energy and focus, like with genuine, like, I really want to understand this.
Yeah, not really. I think, yeah, my dad would go to my football games, but he played football, so he was already, I guess, into that. But if it's something they had no interest in, it wasn't much of that.
Well, then, of course, he would have some bragging rights if you played well and so on, right? Okay. Yeah. So, that's a shame. It's a shame that they missed out on a lot of fun with you, and it's a shame, really, that you felt rejected, because it is a rejection, especially with kids. See, your parents were in each other's lives voluntarily. You and your siblings weren't in their lives at all voluntarily. And so, parents owe this kind of interest to their children in what their children are interested in. Because if parents don't show any interest in what their children are interested in, the children feel what?
Like we're uninteresting.
Yeah, uninteresting, weird, incompatible with, you know, at least romantically successful people like our parents. At least they've been sexually successful because we exist. So how do you feel if your parents don't take much interest in what you're interested in? Yeah, you feel uninteresting. You feel weird. You feel like pointless. You feel like you just have these bizarre little obsessions that don't make sense to anyone. Did your parents, before or after the divorce, were they distracted a lot? Did they watch a lot of TV? Did they go out a lot? Like, where were they when you were home?
Where were they? I think my mom was the main one looking after us. So, yeah, she did watch quite a bit of TV. And, yeah, I felt like there wasn't that much time that she would sort of spend with us, like, quality time. So, yeah, TV or, doing sports, which working, like, seems like she was often busy doing something she needed to do or distracting herself with TV or something like that.
Okay, and how did it feel to you when your mother would rather watch hours of television than play a game with you?
Didn't feel like we were very, like, we're not close. Like, there's a barrier there between us.
And what was that barrier?
It's that barrier. I don't know, I'm blanking on that. But yeah, there's a distance. I don't know. Sorry, I'm blanking on this one.
Okay, so what's the barrier? She would rather watch TV than spend time with you or your siblings. So what does that mean?
What does it mean? Well, I guess it means she thinks the TV is more interesting than us.
Well, not she thinks, she believes that that's not she thinks, that's like a theoretical. Like, it's real.
Yeah.
That she prefers watching TV to spending time with her children. I'm an empiricist, yeah. Right? So I don't really care what people say. I care what they do, because in we can't read minds. We can only process deeds, right?
Right, right.
So she would rather spend time watching television than interact with her children. And of course, I know not 100% and all of that, but that's the fact, isn't it? That's the empirical fact. Children are empirical. They're not theoretical, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess this thought just came to me when you were talking about the going to the things your wife likes to do, farmers markets and things like that. You know, there'll be times like my mum would want to go to, I don't know, yeah, art galleries or little craft shops and things like that, that was not very interesting for me. And yeah, I don't feel like there was much reciprocity there, like of, okay, well, I'll do something that my mum wants to do. She wants to go to this art gallery and I don't really want to be there, but then we're going to go and yeah, do something that I want to do. If it wasn't, certainly wasn't balanced like that. Just as another example, I guess.
Okay, got it. So how do you think children experience that kind of rejection? Because it is rejection.
We experience that kind of rejection. Is this like what, in the moment you'd feel it, or it's just a thing that builds up over time?
Let's talk about in the moment, because it's a little tough to talk about things in the abstract that way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, yeah, it does. I guess it would feel like rejection if I was to say I wanted to play soccer with my mom, or, you know, some sort of sport like that, that she didn't want to do. And then she just says no. There's some rejection. There's just a bit more distance between us. If that answers your question, I don't know if that really gets the emotions of it, but yeah. Does that answer the question?
Okay. So have you known people who have a dog, or have you ever had a dog?
I've never had a dog, but yeah, I've known people who've had a dog.
Okay. Now, you know that a dog takes a fair amount of maintenance, right? I mean, you've got to walk the dog, you've got to take the dog to the vet, you've got to clean up after the dog, you've got to train the dog, you know, that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
All right. Now, if somebody has a dog, but doesn't walk the dog, doesn't play with the dog, doesn't clean up after the dog, doesn't train the dog, what do you think of that person?
They're a bad owner, potentially.
Okay, tell me more about, yeah, tell me what you think about that. A bad owner, okay, so tell me more about what you think about that.
Well, they're quite a neglectful owner, and I guess depends how far it goes, but you'd say that's quite cruel if they weren't, going to take a dog for a walk, give it any attention. Like, why do they even get the dog? Like, was it just they wanted it as a puppy, but then they didn't, but then they got bored of it, or you'd say it's abusive, I think.
Right. So why would someone get a dog and then ignore the dog? Because, I mean, if you get tired of the dog, what can you do? You can just give the dog away. There's lots of people who want dogs, particularly free dogs. So you just find a family and say, oh, you know what? I thought I would enjoy dog ownership. Turns out I don't. So you would, right? You would give the dog up, right? Now, everybody knows what children need in a way much more vivid than knowing what dogs need, because we've all been children. So we've all experienced that hunger and that need for parents to love us, to play with us, to interact with us, and so on, right? This is especially true of the eldest child, because they're with the parents earliest and longest, if that makes sense. So why would people have children and then not interact with them very much? Why would somebody have a dog and keep a dog? And let me ask you this. What if somebody had three dogs? They get one dog, they kind of ignore it. It's really cruel. The dog is whining and upset and tense and miserable. And then they get another dog and they ignore that dog too. And then they get another dog and they ignore that dog too. What would you think?
I have no idea what would make somebody want to do that.
Sure you do. What would you think? What would you think?
Do it.
What would you think? Why would somebody keep getting dogs and not spending time with them?
Do they Do they like seeing sad dogs? Like, I don't know. Why are you dying?
So there's a number of reasons, all of which are pretty cruel. So the reason you would get three dogs and ignore them all is because you enjoy the dogs wanting things from you, and you enjoy the power of not giving those things to the dogs. Oh, are you hungry? Yeah, you can't have any food. And the dog is longingly looking at you and desperate to go for a walk, and you say, nope, not going for a walkie today. Rover, Buster, Keaton, not going for walkies. Walkies, no, right? It's a form of power through denial, right? It's standard prison guard stuff, right? The prisoners want their freedom, especially in some gulag, right, where the prisoners aren't even justly there. They're not criminals. They're just against the regime. So it's standard, oh, you want something? You can't have it. And people feel powerful because of that. They feel like they have value because they provoke need in others and then refuse to satisfy it. I mean, when I was younger, we used to call this blue balls, that a girl or a woman would get you all hot and bothered and, you know, would feel you up a little and then, oh, got to go home, right? And of course, that's perfectly fine and valid and so on. But it's also a little cruel, right? It's like going to a homeless guy who's starving and say, oh, I'm going to eat the sandwich right in front of you, and just seeing the longing. And like, it's kind of cruel and it's maybe a little sadistic and all of that. But is it just about having power because other people need something from you and you can deny it?
Yeah. What, could there not be another reason?
Of course, there could always be another reason. I'm open to hearing them.
Well, what if when you've got the dogs, you were, happy and doing well, and then your life, your life's not going well anymore, and you're depressed, and that's why you don't want to interact with your dogs or take them for a walk. Like, what if it's not about the power? It's just, you're depressed.
Okay, that's certainly a fine hypothesis. Now, do pets generally help people with depression or make people worse?
I think they help, yeah.
Yeah, so you can't say, I'm too depressed to interact with my dogs, when interacting with your dogs makes you feel better. I mean, I remember when I was new to the media game and I was being attacked by the media, which was kind of a bit of a surprise for me because I'm actually a really nice guy and all of that. But I remember being, you'd get kind of stressed about things, right? And whenever I was stressed about these things or other things, I go roll around and play with my daughter and it all vanishes and I'm great. Now, I'm not saying that I'm some sort of template for everyone, but in general, people interacting with affectionate animals, it doesn't make them more depressed, does it? It helps. So if you say, well, I'm too depressed to interact with my kids, it's like saying I'm in too much pain to take painkillers. It doesn't make sense because kids will make you feel better.
But would it make you feel better if you felt guilty about that? If you felt guilty about the divorce,
Hang on. Because we're talking about things that led up to the divorce. I understand the divorce is important.
Right.
But we're talking about not interacting with you even when you were younger.
Right. I guess it is a little bit hard to remember, but I don't think it was as bad before the divorce. I really think it was mainly afterwards. I think my parents did play with me beforehand. So, yeah, I don't think it was like that.
As we talked about earlier, your happiness and the happiness of your siblings had to be discounted, or the unhappiness of you and your siblings had to be discounted for the divorce to even exist in the first place. And so there was already something missing in that your parents got divorced with no emergency. Do you see what I mean?
What do you mean, something missing?
But something missing in your parents. Because if your parents had realized how unhappy the divorce was going to make you and how they were going to have to force you to lie and suppress your feelings, and if they'd have known that decades later you're dealing with emotional disconnects, they wouldn't have got divorced. They would have just done whatever it was necessary or whatever they could do to fix things. Right?
Right. Right.
And so they had to discount how unhappy the divorce was going to make you. In other words, they already had to be selfish in order to get divorced. Now, once you get divorced and you've made these kinds of big mistakes, then you're really committed to your selfishness, and then it becomes harder, even harder, to have empathy with your children. But that doesn't excuse anything. Because also, you know, if you have a hypothesis, right, and we've all done this, right? Say, oh, I think I turned left here. And then the GPS says, nope, you turned wrong, recalculating. So we all have hypotheses, and then we let go of those hypotheses when it turns out we're wrong. So if your parents were like, oh, the kids will be fine if we get divorced, and then they separate, and there's usually a separation prior to divorce, and the kids are really miserable, then they'd say, ooh, you know, we may have calculated wrong. We should probably try and work on the marriage so that the kids aren't so unhappy. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, I remember my dad actually, and I talked to him as an adult about their divorce. He did mention that he, I think it was shortly after they separated, that he did have a thought of, you know, what am I doing? Like, but I guess he just, I don't know, he suppressed that, repressed that, and ignored that thought. I don't.
Well, it probably was the case that he saw how unhappy and destabilizing it was, both for his wife and his kids. The difference being that his wife chose to have him in her life and you kids didn't. So he probably went through like, what am I doing? This calculation is incorrect, right? I thought the kids would not be so unhappy. The kids are really miserable. And screw it. I'm still going on, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So if you see someone ignoring a dog, harming a dog, and getting more dogs, what do you feel?
I'm going to feel a bit sad for the dogs and angry at the person.
Sorry, angry at the person? I mean, are you asking me or telling me?
I'm choking up a bit. But angry at the person.
Angry at the person. Now, if you're angry at your parents for getting divorced and they can't even give you a good reason. Well, son, your mom developed leprosy. Well, kids, your father had a brain tumor and went insane, right? I mean, you could imagine reasons, right? So they can't even get you. There's not even a good reason. It wasn't even like somebody had a terrible affair or, you know, your mother put on 150 pounds or like you don't know why. Why are my parents putting me through this ungodly level of suffering? Why? But they can't tell you, right? No, we fell out of love. Well, that doesn't mean anything. And it is also very harmful to tell children that you can just fall out of love. Do you know why?
Because it makes you scared to commit to anyone.
Yeah, because who knows what happens, right? You could be together for 10, 15 years, and then, oh, man, it sucks, man. You just wake up one day and you just kind of hate the person. No reason. Nobody did anything. Nothing changed, you know? It's like telling your kids, you know, you can work out, you can exercise. You one day, you just wake up and your arm's fallen off. No reason. Just happens. Happens a lot, actually. I mean, that would kind of freak the kids out, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So even in giving this bullshit non-explanation, they were cruel to the kids. So what you suspected was there was no good reason to get divorced. Deep down, right? We've got an instinct about these things. So deep down, you suspected that there was no good reason to get a divorce, right? But if there's no good reason to get a divorce, why the fuck are they doing it? Why are they putting their children through such ungodly misery? Why are they destroying the family's finances, having to have two homes, having to have things go back and forth, spending God knows how much on lawyers? Why are they doing it? Because without a good reason, it just seems horribly cruel. Like we could say some guy, you know, kills his ex-wife because he found out that his children weren't his. She lied about his paternity. Okay, still send him to prison. It's still wrong to murder your wife. But at least that'd be a motive that we could somewhat comprehend, right? Yeah, if some guy just goes and kills some some woman for no reason, that's really hard to process, right? Why was my family murdered? For what? For what reason? Why was my childhood destroyed? Why was my happiness slaughtered? Why was I sent down this bottomless well of misery from which I'm still trying to dig myself out of decades later? Why? No real reason. That's fucked up. I mean, if your father had become, for some reason, horribly violently angry, or your mother had put on 150 pounds, or somebody started doing drugs, you'd say, well, that was screwed up, but at least I can kind of get it. Well, we just kind of fell out of love. You know, nothing major, no particular reason. There wasn't any of this horrible fighting. Like, then it's just like, well, why are you guys destroying my childhood for nothing? Did you see?
Yeah. I mean, I guess the real reason was because he wanted to date and marry somebody else. And that's what he did. I don't think he did it like, you know, immediately. I don't think he was cheating or anything, but he wanted to move on. And I think he started dating the year after and, got married like 8 years later and, still married. So he can stay married if he wants to.
Sorry, you said he started dating a year later and then he got married 8 years later?
I don't know exactly when he started dating, but I know he dated the woman he married the year after. So he started dating her and then, they got married 8 years after the separation.
Okay, got it. All right, so imagine this. Imagine that you said to your parents, all right, sit down, guys. Okay, I'm trying to retain a shred of respect for you guys. I really am. I'm working like a Turk over here. I'm trying to, why are you blowing up the family? What selfish, lazy nonsense are you telling yourself that you're willing to destroy a family with three little kids? Like, shape the fuck up. Get your shit together. Go to couples counseling. Go to therapy. You've been together for over 10 years. You have three children. Work this shit out. Stop being lazy. Stop being selfish. Turn this ship around. Sort it out. Because otherwise, you're just kind of trashy. You're selfish. I've no respect for you. I mean, I'm forced to live with you, but I've no respect for you. You can't ever tell me to do the right thing when you guys won't even stay married for the sake of your children, when you loved each other enough for over 10 years to have three children and be together. So, sort this shit out, grow the fuck up, and stay married. What would they have said?
When they told me they were getting separated, this is...
Yeah.
What if I had said that?
Yeah. We're getting separated. No, you're not. No, you're not. Stow that shit. You're not getting fucking separated. Okay? I don't want to. You've got three kids. Grow the fuck up. Work out your differences. Man up, woman up, sort it out. You're not getting separated. That's pathetic. That's ridiculous. It's embarrassing. It's cringe. It's retarded. You're not getting separated. You sort this shit out.
Well, there's no need for that sort of language. This is, adult matters that, maybe you don't fully understand at your age, but...
I'm sorry, concerned about, you're blowing up the whole family and you're concerned about a cuss word? Are you kidding me? Do you have any perspective at all? Why are you getting divorced? Is one of you violent? Has there been terrible affairs? Is either one of you drug addicted? I haven't noticed anything. Why are you getting divorced? You made vows, aren't you? You're a religious man. You're a Christian. You made vows before God Almighty to stay married, better and worse, sickness and health, rich or poor, till death do you part. That's what I put my faith on. I mean, you expect me to keep my promises, right? You expect me to keep my word. This was your promise. Have you been to couples counseling? Have you really tried to work it out? Have you done the necessary work to keep your vows before Almighty God? That was the entire foundation of my existence and the security of me and my siblings. Why are you breaking your word to God and breaking the hearts of your children? What is so bad that it's worth breaking our hearts? Go ahead.
I've been thinking about this for a number of years. It's not an easy decision, but I don't love your mom anymore. And I don't think I can stay married to someone that I don't love.
Sorry, Dad, I don't understand. Hang on. I mean, don't you continually tell me that I sometimes have to do things that I don't want to do? I have to do chores, I've got to do homework, I've got to go to the dentist, I got to go to the doctors, right? So you tell me continually that sometimes you just got to push through and do things even when you don't want to do them. And you were in love for 10 years and you have 3 children. So what did you do that was wrong? Or do people just wear out like shoes or something? Are you trying to tell me that I can never get married because I'm just going to wake up one day or slowly over years and there's nothing I can do, which is going to fall out of love? Is that what you want to teach your kids, that you can just fall out of love and there's nothing you can do? Because that's fucked up. If you're going to tell your kids that, yo, you can make all these vows, you can love the person with all your heart, but it just, you know, like sand in an hourglass, it just falls away. You just end up out of love, like you end up out of gas in a car, except you promised to never fall out of love. That was your promise. That was your vow. That's what you founded your entire marriage on, which we're not going to fall out of love. So what did you do that was wrong? How did you break this love? Tell me all the steps you guys have made to keep the marriage working. Tell me all the things you've done. There better be a long list. Tell me all the things that you've done to keep the marriage happy, to keep the marriage going, to stay in love. What have you done? You do date nights. You enjoy each other's hobbies as much as possible. Do you laugh together? Have you gone to couples counseling? Have you done self-knowledge? Have you gone to individual therapy? Tell me everything you've done to keep the marriage together.
Sometimes you just know that it just can't work. I think, I have been thinking about this for years.
Daddy, did you hear my question? Because it's pretty rude to ignore someone's question, especially when it's about the happiness of their entire childhood. What was my question, Dad?
I honestly don't know what he'd say.
Well, they can't say shit.
Yeah.
They didn't go to individual therapy. They didn't go to couples counseling. They didn't pursue self-knowledge. They didn't work to enjoy each other's hobbies. It's like some guy who never works out and overeats saying, hey, man, you know, sometimes you just get fat. It's like, no, you took every step to ensure. And he broke his vow. Yeah. So if you were, and of course, no 8-year-old can have that conversation. I get that. It's just a mental exercise, right?
Yeah.
But if you kept pushing, what would he do? What happens when you get between a hedonist and his pleasures?
Well, he'd probably try and leave the conversation or get angry. Or maybe both.
Yeah. And then I'd say, well, this is why your marriage is failing, because you're immature, because you can't handle a difficult conversation. This is why your marriage is failing, Dad, because you're kind of a coward and you're kind of bitchy. Sorry, no offense to you, Mom, but no, you're kind of bitchy, right? So I'm giving you some tough questions and you're getting all pissy and you want to run away like a coward. Well, not like a coward. It is cowardly. You should be able to handle some questions from your kid, especially when you're kind of half destroying your kid's life, right? So this is why your marriage isn't failing because you just mysteriously ran out of love. Your marriage is failing because you run away from difficult conversations. You don't hold yourself accountable and you gaslight and you avoid and you fog. And it's really wretched. It's really shameful. And listen, you can do all of that, Dad. I mean, you can do whatever you want. Obviously, you're the adult. I'm just a little kid. So you can do whatever you want. I get that. But I'll tell you this, there's a price to be paid for this. If you break up this family, I will pretty much have nothing but contempt for you for the rest of your life. And the rest of my life, too. If anyone asks me after you're dead and gone, say, what was your dad like? Oh, that little bitch. Yeah, selfish, immature, cowardly, runs away from difficult conversations with his 8-year-old little boy. Such a tough guy. Pathetic, really. Sad sack, sad specimen. Sickly, selfish, soulless. I mean, that's what I will understand. So, yeah, listen, you're the adults, man. You do what you want. I mean, I'm going to make the case, but I'm just saying that the consequence is that I actually will hold both of you in contempt for the rest of my life. Because you're smashing up a family without even doing one little bit of work to try and keep it together. You show me the receipts from the couples counselor. You show me the books that you've worked through together to try and figure out how to get along better. You show me the individual therapy bills and the receipts. Then I'll show you some respect. But you've done none of it. You lazy specimens, you're smashing up a family for nothing, with no effort, no work, and you have the audacity to tell me I have to do things that I don't want, and sometimes I have to suck it up and do the right thing even though it's hard. It's pitiful. And you give me this mealy-mouthed bullshit, oh, we fell out of love. What are you, 3 years old? Figure out how to keep your love going, as you promised to Almighty God that you would. Suck it up, work it out, deal with it. Because you're going to break the hearts of your children. You selfish, selfish people. What have you got to say for yourself? Huh? Show me the receipts. Show me the receipts of all of the couples counseling and all the work you've put in. Show me. Take me to the priest. Let me talk to the priest, because I'm sure you've gone to the priest to get advice on all of this. And did he say, yeah, absolutely. Although there's nothing particular going wrong with the marriage. I mean, your balls are itching for someone else, so off you go. Show me how you've earned your way out of this marriage. And if there's nothing, you haven't tried everything, you haven't done everything, you haven't really done anything to try and sort this out. I'm unhappy. So what, I just don't have to do things when I'm unhappy? Is that the rule? I just don't have to do things? I don't really want to do any dishes. That makes me unhappy. Oh no, you got to do the dishes. I don't really want to go to the dentist. You know, he scrapes my gums. I don't like it. Well, you got to go to the dentist. I don't want to go to the doctor. They stick with needles. You got to go to the doctor. Jesus, you're fucking hypocrites.
Yeah. I don't know what he would say. There's no
he would get very angry.
Answer to them.
Yeah, he would get very angry.
Yeah. And he does certainly avoid those difficult conversations throughout his life, I think. And avoids, yeah. I think he avoids those difficult emotions as well. And I don't know, maybe I learned it from him, but.
Well, you're just protecting your parents. And I understand that. I mean, as a kid, you had to. How old are you now?
32.
32. So you're just protecting your parents. Because if you get angry at the casual manner in which your entire childhood was thrown into the wood chipper, if you get angry at that, and let's say you were to sit down with your parents and say, guys, I do not understand, like, what the hell happened with my childhood here? And also, they don't seem to have noticed that you kind of run on a bit of a monotone and don't have access to many emotions, right? They don't. So you're still protecting your parents, because if you get angry, they feel bad, right?
Yeah.
That 24 years ago, they made a mistake. They should have worked to fix the marriage. I mean, maybe they would have stayed together. Maybe they wouldn't have. Who knows? That's an alternate dimension timeline. Of course, if they'd been the kind of people to work on the marriage properly, then they probably wouldn't have got divorced in the first place. So if you get angry, then your parents will be upset. How much contact are you in with your parents these days?
Well, I'm living at my mom's house at the moment till I find another job. Been here for like a couple of months. And my dad, I would maybe see him every couple of weeks, something like that.
Yeah, so you're in very close contact. You're cheek by jowl, as they used to say in England. You're in very, very close contact with your parents.
Yeah.
So you're still protecting them. You're protecting them from the upset and the anger that you have at them, not just for things in the past. I mean, have they sat you down and said, you seem to be kind of down, or what's going on, or, you know, you don't seem to be very passionate, or we've noticed that there's something lacking in the way that you present. I mean, have they done anything like that?
They did, but only when it got really, really bad. So they essentially ignored it until it got to an extreme level, and then they said something about it.
And what did they say?
And they kind of approached it, yeah, kind of like that. It was, how would you say it? But it was almost like a little bit passively, like it has nothing to do with them. Like, yeah, I've noticed you're feeling quite down lately. I don't know, do you want to talk about it? And I, like, they don't sort of say, don't address, well, you know, maybe it's because of the divorce, or they don't sort of, they just sort of, take any responsibility, or are proactive in that sense. And yeah, I guess I got the feeling like it wouldn't really help talking to them much.
Well, because they don't really want to know.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Sure.
Exactly.
Sure. Yeah, so they don't really want to know.
Make any other excuse.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, they want to make any other excuse for it. And because, yeah, I was actually quite depressed when I was around 18 to 21. And yeah, they wanted me to go on antidepressants. They want to blame it on brain chemistry. There's just an imbalance, you know.
Sure. Everybody
as if it's
does,
just
right?
A
yeah,
mystery,
course.
You know, nothing to do with something that's happened, you know. They don't want to be blamed for it.
Sure, I get that. Yeah, no, I mean, if I'd really hurt someone, I would like to pretend that a pill is the problem, or a pill is the solution too. Nothing to do with me. It's just, you know, brain chemistry. Sure. That's very convenient.
Yeah. But I guess the other thing, since I don't want to, get to this. So I had some conversations with my dad to try and understand some of these things and try and get an answer. And maybe there's been, you know, small little bits here and there, but he wouldn't, a lot of it was some sort of bullshit answers, and, it's not like he'd give a big apology or anything like that. So I sort of think, is there anything more left to ask him? Is there any more information I could get out of him that would be useful? And then the other thing is, I have two half siblings on my dad's side, and I have thought, yeah, if I just stopped seeing my dad, then that maybe that's positive in some ways, but then now I don't know how I'd explain it to them, or would I explain it to them? Like, it would just be I don't know how to deal with it because of that. If it was just him and his wife, then I feel I could more easily distance myself, but I think that's, yeah, I don't know how to deal with that. So yeah, two questions there. Is there anything more? More information.
I'm sorry,
I
just remind me. Sorry, remind me of your dating situation.
I'm single for 2 years.
So, what should your focus be on? Your parents, children, or something else?
Yeah, it should be on getting my life going.
I think so. I mean, it's, of course, it's good and nice for you to talk about your half-siblings and so on, but you, I think, have to get your own life going.
Right. But then they would, if I, wasn't to contact them anymore, then they're going to think, it's almost similar to the to my dad's non-explanation of the divorce, of saying, you know, just fell out of love. Like, if I just sort of didn't say anything, then they're going to think, what the fuck happened here?
Sorry, when have I said that you should have nothing to do with your parents?
I'm not saying that you said that, but if that was what I did.
Okay, but why are you talking about, why are you talking about if you just, ghosted them?
Well, I guess, yeah, that's what I was thinking. I don't know how to proceed. Like,
if sure you do.
My dad's not going to, if he's not going to give me any answers, he's not going to apologize, then what, like, is there much point talking to him?
Well, how do you know? I mean, surely you can, if you approach it, obviously I was talking a bit aggressively because you're having problems with your temper, right? But if you were to approach your father more gently and with more curiosity to try to find out what happened with your childhood, I mean, would he absolutely refuse to talk about it? Would he, if you sort of said, well, I don't quite understand why you and mom, like I said, you could say, like, I'm kind of nervous about getting married and all, because, you know, you said you, I remember you very clearly, you're saying, like, you just fell out of love. It's kind of alarming, right? You could get a life together going with someone and then you just fall out of love. That's kind of terrifying. And would he be someone who wouldn't give you the answer? He wouldn't talk about it? He wouldn't help you out that way?
I think he would have the conversation, but somewhat reluctantly. And when I've had, you know, talked to him about things of this nature, I think I do need a bit more of the anger and a bit more just calling him out when he gives me a bullshit answer. But I have this overwhelming sadness, and I know,
sadness is the acceptable form of anger. So, you know, whenever there's some horrible murder or something like that, particularly from a migrant community, what do they always say? Oh, this terrible tragedy, right? So they're trying to reprogram you to sadness rather than to anger. So anger is the masculine form of sadness. Because if somebody makes us sad, like, you know, if somebody kills your dog, like, on purpose, right? Then you're sad that your dog is gone and you're angry that someone killed your dog, right? And so sadness is focusing on your loss. Anger is focusing on who stole from you, if that makes sense. So I think I heard it in your voice over the course of this call that you're relatively more comfortable with sadness than you are with anger.
Yeah.
And that's definitely. Because it seems to me most selfish people are okay as long as you appease them, but if you provoke them, they lash out. They indulge in temper. It's a way of guarding their selfishness as they attack those who get angry at them. Or another way of putting it is that selfish people are quite happy to get angry at you, but you can't get angry at them, right?
Yeah, I understand it intellectually, but it's hard to actually do it.
So what do you mean? It's hard to do what?
Like, I can understand intellectually, like, yeah, I'm scared to express anger towards my dad, but, and more comfortable with the sadness, but I
okay, but it's not you.
Know how to do
Sorry,
it.
Sorry, hang on. It's not you. This is the separation between you and your father that's necessary for true adulthood to land on your shoulders. It's not you. Your father doesn't want you getting angry at him. It's not you who doesn't want to get angry at your father, and it's not you who's scared about getting angry with your father. It's your father who's scared about you getting angry with him and your mother. And it's their fear, not yours, that you're processing. It is your parents who don't want you to feel. It is not you who doesn't want to feel. And because your parents had all the power, if your parents said, don't feel, then you, like I, like everyone, as a child, we obey our parents. And if your parents said, you don't feel, you suppress your feelings because we all have to survive, right?
Yeah.
And so this is not your fear. This is not like, oh, I can't get in touch with my feelings. I am so distant from my feelings. I repress my feelings. I mean, I get that it's internalized, right? I understand that. But it is your father and your mother and perhaps extended family too, since they're all kind of responsible for how you were raised. They are the ones who don't want you getting angry. And they will, of course, punish and bribe and threaten and ghost and withdraw and manipulate to avoid your anger. Of course. Sure. I mean, the rabbit avoids with every twist and turn the predator, so to speak, and they don't want to look back upon their lives and say, we have made very bad decisions that we can't undo. I mean, that's really tough for people. This is why it's kind of important to not make bad decisions. As a whole, or at least try and correct them as soon as possible, because if you make bad decisions for too long, all you can ever do is rage against the truth tellers and threaten and, right? And because your emotions, when you're around your parents, your emotions obey the commandment, thou shalt not feel, then you can't have a lot of joy, you can't have spontaneity, you can't have healthy anger, you can't fall in love, and you're going to lack the lively charisma of a fluid and expressive relationship with emotions. Because love is an emotion. Ambition is an emotion. Without emotions, it's very hard to do much of import and substance in life.
So the more I'm around my, because, right, so yeah, the more I'm
sorry,
around
not the
my
more,
parents,
sorry, not the more you're around. I've got to be relatively rapid. I have another call coming up. So it's not when you're around your parents. It's when you're around your parents and aren't honest. That's the killer combo. You can be around your parents and you can be honest. And you can say, guys, do you not notice I have a tough time feeling? Did you not notice that that showed up around the divorce? Oh, what are you bringing up that ancient history for? Blah. They'll try and make you feel like, oh, you're stuck in the past. You got to let it go. I can't believe you're 24 years ago. Who cares? Like, of course, they'll try and diminish it and all of that. That's just cruel. If it matters to your kid, it matters to you as a parent.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got to be honest with them. The practical way to actually approach it, because I do, yeah, like I said, I struggle with confronting them with the truth. Do I need to practice it in my mind beforehand?
I don't know how to tell you to be honest. You know, it's like I can teach you how to negotiate for your wages. I can't tell you exactly how much you're worth, right? So I can't teach you how to be honest. I can say, you know, you could say, you know, I've really been thinking about my childhood a lot lately, and I think I've been struggling with my emotions since the divorce. And I know that seems like a long time ago, but I'd like to talk about that and try and sort of puzzle out what might be going on. I mean, that's a perfectly reasonable thing to say, isn't it?
Okay, yeah.
And if your parents don't want to talk about it, say, no, look, it's like, I really need you to do it. Like, it's really important to me. You know, I haven't been in a relationship for 2 years. I'm in trouble finding work. There's something not working in my life. And of course, I'm not saying it's all the divorce or anything like that. But if I had to sort of think about before and after that I felt strongly, I think the divorce had a lot to do with it. So I really do need to talk about this. And, you know, thank you guys so much. You know, we've got time, right? We've got time. We've got all weekend or whatever. Like, I would really like to talk about this stuff. I think it's really, I don't think we talk about important things as a family enough. I think we just kind of go about our day and do our little things and pay our bills and watch some TV. And I think that we really should sit down and talk about some important things, because there have been some very important things that have gone on in the family that I just don't think we're really processing much or having any conversations about. And I feel like I'm just kind of drifting, if that makes sense. You don't have to be yelling at people, right, or whatever. I mean, just be honest. And, you know, if they piss you off, you can say, well, it's kind of pissing me off. I mean, I don't know if you've read my book, Real Time Relationships, but it talks about how to express yourself honestly in the moment without attacking people.
Okay, I should read that.
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's something I have to practice.
Sure. Yeah, for sure. You can journal it. You can practice it. Talk therapy might help as well.
I mean, I did do some talk therapy and sort of helped a little bit, but sometimes, yeah, I feel like this call was a lot more getting to the root of things than a lot of what the talk therapy did, to be honest.
Yeah, and don't prejudge your emotions as to whether they're rational or not. Oh, that's too strong a feeling. That's too less. We don't know. It's like trying to tell your immune system what it should or shouldn't be bothered by. It's like, you know, just your immune system, I mean, unless there's something really wrong, is there to do its job and so on. And I don't try to tell my stomach how much acid it needs to dissolve certain things and extract the nutrients. I don't know. It does its thing. It's the same thing with anger. I don't prejudge my anger as too strong or just right or too little, because that's just a way of fencing it in and not letting it do its thing. It's like having a guard dog and then keeping it in a full body cast. It doesn't really do much good as a guard dog in that sense. You got to let it run free a little, right?
Yeah. No. Okay. Don't judge the emotions. They're there to tell us things, right?
Yeah, absolutely. All right, brother. I got a boogie, and I hope that you'll stay in touch. I really do appreciate the conversation, and please let me know how it goes.
Okay. Thank you very much, Stefan, for your time.
You're very welcome, man. Take care.
Bye.